All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News and Focus podcast. It's Thursday afternoon, and we are looking at Justice Anthony, right?
Antonin.
Yeah, Antonin Scalia's death. It was just kind of off the radar, unpredictable in the sense that he didn't come out cancer or anything like that, just didn't wake up. And the guy's incredible. I mean, he's incredible. 28 grandchildren. 28 grandchildren. I think I read he was married for 55 years, I believe. Man's man, quail hunting the day before his premature death. And I think that most people would have no clue of the importance of this replacement. In fact, I would just dare say that most people in general, John, don't even know the three branches of the government anymore.
It wouldn't surprise me.
You know what? After your comment last night, after my sermon, when you were discussing what folks in the auditorium don't know,
it's
you can't hardly believe it. But I believe you. I mean, it's obvious, it's true, that there a lot of the people in the auditorium have to be told rudimentary things.
And so over and over and over again, Bill.
So I would imagine when it comes to civics, it's much the same thing.
Yeah, I would say that most people do not understand the degree to which the Supreme Court has become the powerhouse of the government.
Well, even that, I bet you could say, how many Supreme Court justices are there?
Right.
You know, how are they appointed? You know,
mm-hmm. Do we vote for them? Yeah. How do they get in office?
Yeah.
How long do they last for?
Yeah.
What's the importance of it? So that's the nature of this podcast.
Well, I felt like I didn't know anything after the death. People are saying, well, now it's tied 4-4. I'm thinking, you mean to tell me we were ahead and we lost things like the same...
Because of John Roberts.
Sex marriage?
John Roberts is...
he swings when he shouldn't.
Yeah,
great pun.
It's basically 4-4-1. That's the way it's set up, right? Well, now it's 4-3-1, but it was 4-4-1 and you had a...
And you're calling Roberts the one, right?
At least in the most recent cases.
Yeah, and he was an appointee of President Bush.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
43, right?
Yeah. And he's probably been the single greatest disappointment to
conservatives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and really, I mean, Justice Kennedy's always been a little bit moderate in his views too, but that's a whole other story. But Roberts was supposed to be a fairly staunch conservative, and he has not been that at all.
No, he's almost like, does this guy read? You know, you really, of course he does, right? He was, like, I think, 51 when he was appointed, and so a young justice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the replacements they're considering is 44 years old.
Yeah, I've seen some of the ones that they brought up.
Good. Think about 44 years old.
Yeah, that's potentially 40 years of...
Four decades of influence. It'll take a lot. So let's get into our article, Brian.
All right. So Justice Antonin Scalia's death leaves the court with two basic options for cases left on the docket in this term. If the justices are deadlocked 4-4.
Which one are you at?
House Scalia's dead.
Got it.
That's what you're doing, right?
Yes, thank you.
All right. One is an automatic affirmance of the lower court decision. The other is set the case aside for re-argument. I thought that was augment. Re-argument in the term that starts in October in the hope that it will be decided by a full court. So it looks like the first case we have is abortion, which is to be argued on March 2nd. of this year. The court will hear a challenge to a Texas law, the Whole Woman's Health versus Cole. And that would leave the state with about 10 abortion clinics down from more than 40. The court has not heard a major abortion case since 2007. This case has the potential to revise the constitutional principles governing abortion rights.
Well, you okay today?
Yeah.
What'd you have for lunch?
Stuffed peppers.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they're burning his tongue.
Yeah. Killing them. And a cup of coffee.
All right. Without Justice Scalia, a 4-4 split would automatically affirm the appeal court's ruling without giving reasons and without setting a precedent. In this case, that would uphold the restrictions and close all but about 10 clinics. But the Supreme Court would set no national rules and relevant constitutional principles would remain unchanged. All right, what's our next case, David?
Affirmative action argued December 9th of last year In Fisher versus University of Texas, the court will decide whether the race-conscious program used to admit students to the University of Texas at Austin violates the Constitution's equal protection principles. The ruling could be narrow, as the Texas plan is idiosyncratic, or broad, affecting the admissions policies of most colleges and universities. Without Justice Scalia, the case will be decided by 7 members of the court because Justice Elena Kagan has recused herself.
What is that verb? I don't think I've ever seen
it
before.
I'm not going to participate.
Recuse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Means
when you have a conflict of interest, right, you yeah. expect to do that.
Right. Yeah. Judges. Yeah. It's common for judges to do that if they know somebody in the trial or if there's a something that might.
See, that's why you should listen to these podcasts because you learn stuff, and that's the point of these podcasts. So argued on December 9th, David. So this case has already been presented before them, but a decision is yet to be rendered.
And obviously, Scalia's vote will not be a part of this,
which changes the dynamic.
Yeah, like I said, if it was 4-4-1, that takes it down to 4-3-1. And then with Kagan out, you're back to 3-3-1, I guess, is what you would put it.
So, again, Roberts becomes this giant.
He tends to be the swing vote. Yeah.
Right. So a race-conscious program, that would be an awareness of the ethnicity of the students?
Probably a stated bias in, or quotas, or perhaps, about the percentage of students you're going to admit from a certain ethnicity, a certain socioeconomic background, and you may or may not set different requirements for those different groups. So the possibility, affirmative action opens up the possibility of somebody from one ethnic group having higher qualifications but being beaten out by somebody in another ethnic group because of the numbers they've set out on how they're going to do admissions.
All right.
To be sure, though, we've got to understand that affirmative action is already in place. What they're arguing for is letting it go. Yeah, it's already there. What they're arguing is that the current affirmative action violates the constitutional principle of equality. Mm-hmm. So they're arguing to disband it.
Yeah.
But it's been, in places like Michigan University, it's most notably challenged that a lot. Because of that.
Right. Well, it's been around since the 80s.
Right, right.
It's a form of reverse discrimination.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's go with class actions. What in the world name is that? Tyson Foods versus what, David?
Buofakeo?
Oh, wow, that was really good. That's what I
was saying. Wow. That was excellent. Try to read this paragraph. Then,
yeah, right. Okay, I think I'm good now.
Let's see if you can pronounce it the same way twice. Right.
This class action, Tyson Foods versus Buofakeo, was brought by workers at a pork processing plant who said they did not get enough overtime pay for the time they spent putting on and taking off protective gear and the like. The court will decide whether the workers may rely on statistical formulas to establish what they are owed or whether they must establish damages individually.
That's going all the way to the Supreme Court.
How about that?
Wow.
That is hard to imagine.
Your hairnet is a Supreme Court issue. So without Justice Scalia...
It might be more than a hairnet.
Yeah, I would think so.
I know. I was being facetious. Without Justice Scalia, a 4-4 tie would leave in place the workers' victory.
I bet you're there, hoping that it remains that way.
Contraception are to be argued March 23rd. In Zubik versus Burwell, the court will consider how a contraception coverage requirement under the Affordable Care Act applies to religiously affiliated institutions like schools and hospitals. Many of them object to an accommodation offered by the Obama administration that allows them to avoid the requirement by filling out a form saying that makes them complicit in sinful conduct. Without Justice Scalia, a 4-4 tie would affirm a number of appeals court decisions, most but not all sustaining the accommodation.
Well, I've been reading one or two conspiratory perspectives on this justice's death, and I don't see how that this is a clean sheet towards either side in the case of his death. I mean, in some cases, the outcome is conservative because of his death, and in other cases, the outcome is liberal because of his death.
Yeah.
So his death's probably not a conspiracy?
Well, I don't know. The piece I read said, look, February 13th through 15th is the first day of a 3-day Luciferian, holiday, and he died on the 13th, and it's the 44th day of the year, and he's the 44th president, and
administration.
Yeah, so I mean, there are people working hard to blame President Obama or his administration, or the underlying ruling body. We want the I word, who's responsible for this, saying that the reason his pillow is over his face is chloroform, and the man died obviously because conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't see how because there are people out there that suspect foul play no matter what.
Right. Right? Sure.
I kind of lean that way, and so I'm sitting here thinking, well, there are things that affect. You'd have to find someone that's intimately involved with one of these situations who wants the death of the justice.
Well, they'd have to assume that they're just going to let the case stand by the appeals court. I guess maybe if it played out in a different way, maybe we could say, because the other option is we don't rule on this and we rule on it in the fall and hoping that that the president appoints another liberal justice and all the liberal things get passed in the fall.
Doesn't the Republican Senate have to confirm?
Yes.
The Republican Senate has to confirm the presidential appointee, a nominee.
Right. Well, that's the sticking point.
Well, what is so sticking about it? I sit back and I think, what is wrong with these idiots? The conservatives are in charge, and we're concerned that the president might nominate someone? That's not the concern.
Well, I mean, Ted Cruz has been very vocal about the fact that he's gonna hold it up. And of course he's getting shot left and right when he says that, because the Democrats now spin that thing around and say, well, you're hurting the democratic process and the president has the right to do this, even though Democrats have done the exact same thing.
Well, President Obama did it.
Yeah, exactly. He held up with Roberts, I think, right?
He held up in Congress.
He has a right to nominate. We're not suggesting that he doesn't have a right to nominate.
Some are.
Some are saying don't nominate your idiot if you nominate.
Well, they're saying, one of the takes is this is the last year of his presidency, so he should just wait and let the next president nominate him. Well, he's not going to do that. And, well, the irony there is I saw Chuck Schumer give a speech in 2007 when Bush had 19 months left in his term, and he was making the same argument. He was saying, Bush shouldn't appoint anybody. We should just wait till the next president comes in. And now Chuck Schumer comes out and says, nope, we need to appoint him right now. Well, if that's not just straight politicism, I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's just, when it fits my definition, we'll do it now. I think he has the right to appoint whoever he wants. But like you said, it has to get through Congress. And the Republicans can certainly slam that door if they want to.
I thought you were going to say something, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm okay with that because I want to win. And I'm going to voice, when it's good for my team, I'm going to say, sure, go for it.
Of course.
When it's not good for my team, I'm going to say, let's hold up. That's why I'm here. Yeah. I'm not here to help you, Mr. Liberal.
Right.
So don't be surprised if I would do the same exact thing.
Right. You'd argue for both sides, depending on the situation.
Yeah. And I do it from a point of integrity. I just tell them, I don't want you to win.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be refreshing if they would just say that. Yeah, that was then, this is now. But they don't say that. Shoes on the other foot, as it were.
David, is this
as it were.
Is this the most important thing that a president will do? Can you think of something more important that a president will do in his term?
I mean,
create nationalized insurance.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, maybe. I mean, you could.
Well, he doesn't do that unilaterally, though.
No, he doesn't.
But in terms of lasting impact, like you said, if he appoints a 44-year-old justice now, and that justice is on the court for 40 years
for the next, ten presidents.
That's a pretty tremendous impact that he's made on what's going on in the future. And, the rumor was that Ginsburg was going to retire and before Obama stepped down so he could replace her. Well, I'm not sure she'll do that now because they can keep this strong majority. Because as bumbling as some of the Republicans have been, they are a little worried. The Democrats are a little worried about the next presidential election. So if this gets into the next term, then it swings the other way and the Republicans get a conservative on, especially with the Republican-controlled Senate.
So can the Republicans legitimately keep someone out of office?
They can.
Is it just the senatorial majority?
I think so, but I'm not sure I'd have to look at that and see what the vote has to be.
I need to look, too, because somebody said that the president could appoint one during recess.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I think it still has to go.
I didn't think they could.
Because I thought they passed a law that you couldn't. I read something about that in the 60s. They passed a law that you can't do recess appointments for the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Yeah. So
for other federal courts.
The story, if you go back and read with Reagan, is Reagan originally wanted to appoint Robert Bork, and Bork was basically run out by the Democrat-controlled Senate, and eventually he had to nominate Kennedy, and Kennedy ended up getting the nomination, or getting confirmed by the Senate, but he's a much more moderate position than Bork was, and so the Democrats did this. They just didn't have the thing that is in the Republicans' favor is there's not a whole lot of time. They can push this down the road a little bit if they really want to and see if they can. I mean, it may not be popular in the mainstream media. They're going to get grilled for it. But if they're willing to stand on a principle, they might be able to hold this off until the next president comes in.
Now, David, by filibustering, do they have to do that constantly, or how long does it last for? Or
yeah, that's usually for a bill, you know,
right.
And that there's a limited amount of time that a bill has to be presented and then voted on, and that tends to be what the filibuster is for. I don't know how a filibuster would look with a Supreme Court nominee.
It has to go before committee.
Mm-hmm.
The committee has to approve, and then it goes before the entire Senate, right?
Right.
And so, that's interesting. We need to do a little bit of research this week and see if we can get some clarity for our listeners as to exactly how the process will be.
This is pretty straightforward with a bill. I mean, you saw Ted Cruz a couple years ago get up and filibuster for, 20-something hours.
Jimmy Stewart did like 40
hours. Yeah, and he literally stood up there and read Green Eggs and Ham. I mean, it was... I mean, how do you speak for? And Rand Paul was in on the one too. I mean,
there was a West Virginia senator. I saw him showing pictures of his dog. I mean, talking about old Nelly.
There you go.
I mean, for hours.
You know, you just have to keep talking. You just have to keep, you know. And it's as long as your strength can hold out, you get up there and talk about anything you want.
Can you yield the floor to somebody else? And
yes,
then back and forth.
I'm not sure if you can or not because there were people that were standing with him, but I don't know if anybody else can. Because I think once he stops, somebody else could jump in and demand a vote. So he's got to keep talking the entire time.
Man, I'd have a list of topics.
Did you find out anything?
Genesis
1:43.
One way that it's changed, you know, since I was thinking about this last night, and since I heard 2 days ago or whatever it was, you know, we had the day off. It was Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing a lot of the news reports. I was thinking, had some time to think about it, really how it changes my prayer life because, you know, we always pray for the president. And my first reaction was, I'm going to pray for the president that he makes a huge mistake and appoints somebody who thinks really liberal, but they turn out to be Kennedy or whatever it is. And then I was thinking, well, wait a minute. What I really need to do is I need to pray that some of these justices get saved. And so that's what I started to do. And then I thought, well, here's a crazy idea. We send missionaries to every people group in the world, but as... militant, I'm using that in quotes, militant Christians, we talk about attacking abortion, we picket abortion signs, but who makes it their mission to pray for and to preach to the justices? And just, you know, wear them out with the gospel in as many ways as you can. And, you know, it would probably have to be one of these annoying Billy Pulpit guys that preaches down the street corner, but you never know. I just had all these thoughts rolling around in my mind, but we seem to forget about that important piece of it. You know, missionaries, and I think a better approach would be someone who could befriend them. So, you know, I'm praying for, because one thing that they all said is that they loved this guy personally.
Even Ginsburg calls him her buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they went on vacation together.
Right. And they loved this guy, so a rapport is important. And, of course, these are, you know, smart people, academia. So I'm just praying for somebody that will come along that will have a rapport and a witness for Jesus Christ that will lead some of these people to the Lord to the point where I either start needing to make better decisions or I need to step down from this court.
Mark,
I can do that.
Mark Devers right down the road. Let's call him up and nominate him.
But we think too small in our human ways sometimes. And so, I'm just started praying. I'm praying that the entire court gets saved.
That's about what we need. I mean,
can you imagine how radically that would change our nation overnight?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I can imagine that.
It probably won't happen, but I can pray for it, right?
You certainly may, John. Ginsburg and Scalia were on vacation together in India, and she let him mount the elephant first, and she rode behind him, and they had a fit with her because, you know, here it is, the male leading the way and all that kind of stuff. And she said it was just a matter of weight distribution. All right, let's look at our second article, because I don't know that I want to even look at any more court cases.
Yeah.
That was just enough to get you a sense that there are presently cases on the docket that have either been looked at or will be looked at, and how losing a justice can alter the entire dynamic, and a certain new justice can change the dynamic all over again.
Yeah, especially if we're talking about things like abortion and contraception and immigration and things like that. I mean, these are issues that are going to...
Yeah, the Tyson food one is pretty limited, David. Yeah, it affects a small group. But abortion, on the other hand, is huge.
Yeah, and the ability for, you know, schools and universities and businesses to opt out of a contraception mandate, you know, that impacts us, religious liberty.
So. Absolutely.
Well, not only in just the philosophical point, but financially too, because if you take on all those extra services, I mean, I heard a piece last night about the Affordable Care Act, and here in North Carolina, Blue Cross Blue Shield, I mean, it's about to put them out of business, because all their actuaries were telling them, and by them I mean the government officials, this can't be done financially. Well, you know, it had to happen anyway because that's what they wanted. Well, now they've got to try to make a out of all this mess. And like they brought in like $1.6 billion, and but they have a shortfall of like, you know, just $500 million because there's more people getting services than are paying the bills.
Right, and it's really a big push just to get to single payer.
Right, and I think that's the whole point. They wanted it to fail. I mean, miserable.
They did.
Yeah,
it can't succeed because then they don't get what they really truly want.
Yeah. All right, let's get started, Brian.
All right.
So this title was on Christian News Net. Christian News what? Services? What's the S stand for? It's CNS News. Okay?
All right. We are to be fools for Christ's sake.
This is by Chuck Colson, by the way.
All right. The sudden death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia on Saturday came as a terrible shock. Back in 1996, Chuck Colson described this giant of a man. There will be plenty of time over the next few months to discuss the political and legal implications of the passing of Justice Scalia. But today, I'd like to focus on the legacy of Scalia's life. First, his family. For Scalia, his wife, married for 55 years, chose life was more than a slogan. As Ross Douthat, is that how you would pronounce that one?
Sure.
Douthat? There you go. I like the French prince. As Ross Douthat tweeted on Saturday, politics aside, we should all die full of years with 28 grandchildren in our sleep after quail hunting. And agree or disagree, with his brilliant legal mind, Scalia was clearly a kind of prophet, seeing where the court's embrace of the sexual revolution would lead. In Lawrence v. Texas, which overturned the state's law against sodomy, he warned that the majority's opinion would eventually invalidate laws against bigamy, same-sex marriage, incest, and prostitution, among others. People scoffed, but Scalia was vindicated, most notably by the recent Obergefell decision. The question is now, how soon will we see his other predictions come true in a post-Scalia court?
All right, David, remind us what Obergefell is.
It's the legalization of gay marriage. Okay. It overturns all the gay marriage amendments in every state.
It will become the Roe versus Wade, right?
Yeah, that's a good parallel, yeah.
All right, very good.
One who did understand the importance of Justice Scalia's insights was Chuck Colson. In 1996, Chuck's Breakpoint commentary praised and thanked Scalia not only for his ability to read the times, but for his courageous Christian faith. And so in honor of Justice Antonin Scalia, here's Chuck Colson.
All right, someone else?
Justice Antonin Scalia would no doubt be embarrassed if I called him a prophet, but in many ways that's exactly what he is. Scalia, considered by friend and foe alike to be one of America's top legal minds, has never shied from pointing out the lunacy of the prevailing legal orthodoxy. Some of Justice Scalia's finest moments have been in his withering dissents. In Casey v. Planned Parenthood, he excoriated the majority's position, which defined liberty as choices central to personal dignity and autonomy. He warned that it wouldn't stop at abortion. The next steps were homosexual sodomy, polygamy, adult incest, and suicide. Unfortunately, time has proven him right. Last year, dissenting from the court's refusal to hear an appeal from abortion clinic protesters, he stated that pro-lifers were a currently disfavored class that cannot expect the Supreme Court to look favorably on their appeals.
Mm.
Well, a week ago, the justice spoke out again. Speaking to a meeting of evangelicals in Jackson, Mississippi, the Roman Catholic justice from Brooklyn told his audience that our culture has moved beyond skepticism to open hostility towards Christianity. Taking
all right, let's stop. Okay. I'm sorry. This is 1996. So 4 yeah. plus 16, this is 20 years ago.
Yep.
No wonder why he's a prophet.
Yeah, he's nailed it.
Golly. And what's interesting is the fact that he's Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different than the Roman Catholic vice president that we have. They're probably wanting to know the Pope if he shook his hand in the middle of the road.
Yeah, or our Roman Catholic former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah.
It's almost as though we have conservative and liberal Roman Catholics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep reading.
Taking his cue from Corinthians, he said, "The worldly wise do not believe in the resurrection of the dead, so everything from Easter morning to the ascension had to be made up by the groveling enthusiasts as part of their plan to get themselves martyred." Scalia then noted that cretin, a synonym for moron or an imbecile, is derived from the French word for Christian. Scalia said, "That's the view of Christians taken by modern society. Surely those who adhere to Christian beliefs are to be regarded as simple-minded." Then he brought the crowd to its feet when he told them, "We are to be fools for Christ's sake." Our response, Scalia said, ought to be to pray for the courage to endure the scorn of the sophisticated world. And scorn is what he got. Washington was instantly scandalized. A Supreme Court justice talking about religion? Well, Justice Scalia reminded us of something we'd rather forget, that a world that has rejected the truth himself will naturally reject those who live by his word. But thank you, Justice Scalia, for courageously speaking out and reminding us that acceptance by a hostile culture isn't the goal for those who follow Christ, but bearing witness to the truth which is in Jesus is.
Now, Colson is also a Catholic, correct?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. Colson is an evangelical Christian that got saved in prison.
Yeah, I knew that part, but what's his tie to Catholicism? Is it the fact that he's received so much flack for speaking in Catholic venues?
I think like it's because he's interdenominational. Yeah. He's willing to cross lines that we otherwise would not cross.
I think, there in the 90s, he aligned himself with the Promise Keepers movement, which got a lot of flat from places like the Sword of the Lord and stuff as being a Roman Catholic prop up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable how our own internal fundamentalism wouldn't accept God working anywhere other than in our own churches.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing article with regard to predicting where we're at and where we are going as a nation. And this is why the presidential election is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they filibuster and then Clinton or Sanders gets elected, another candidate of equal liberalism will be put... And you can't filibuster for 4 years, David.
Yeah, they may be able to do it once, but it's going to get more and more difficult.
I'm not so sure I'd be very comfortable with Donald Trump's choice.
I'm so conspiratory in my leanings that I think that he set out to be such an idiot that the Republican would never get voted for. That wouldn't surprise me a bit, because who wouldn't vote for Hillary over Donald Trump in the final analysis? I'm not sure the majority of the U.S. would.
Well, the other conspiracy that's there is that he's a plant, and he's all along, he knew he was going to be an idiot, and he'd break off and be a third party, and he'd take half the Republican Party with him, and it'd be a walk for Hillary.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but...
That last one is even more,
with the things that he says sometimes, you're like, this guy can't be for real.
He can't be conservative.
Yeah.
That dude has been praised by Planned Parenthood. I mean, the things he said 10, 15, 20 years ago, I'm as amazed at conservatives that don't pay attention to what he used to say as I am to liberals who don't care about Hillary's involvement with Benghazi.
Yeah.
I don't know which is the bigger shock.
Yeah.
Yeah, last night I was listening to CNN and they had the Republican candidates on there doing a great job. And Ben Carson said you should know them by their fruits.
Mm.
And Christians are just not doing that. It's unbelievable how they're just completely ignoring everything about Trump and the lifestyle that he lives and the views that he has and the person that he is.
Yeah.
How could one single preacher in the nation endorse him? Much less the number that have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we've said it on previous podcasts, but I'll just say it again. How did Falwell, in his right mind, endorse him? And that's why the school had to walk away from it very quickly and say that that was a personal endorsement, not a corporate endorsement.
Yeah, I think they actually, I heard from someone, did they have Sanders in as well to speak?
Yeah, they did.
Of course they did.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's the way they roll. They usually invite all the big, everybody.
Yeah, they'll go both sides.
I don't have a problem with that so much as I do the endorsement piece.
Sure.
Yeah, if we want to expose our 15,000 students to something more in the spirit of teaching them what's out there, I mean, it would do well for some of them. Because, again, our entire young class is just ignorant.
Yeah, sure.
Just ignorant beyond measure.
The good news is they boot them sometimes. The student body.
Yeah. And most of them laughed at Trump when he got up there and started talking about two Corinthians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like you said, David, just go out and do a man on the street interview and ask how many justices are there.
Yeah, well, I sent a video down to my APUS history students a couple weeks ago, and it was a political group that was doing something on a college campus, and I believe it was Texas Tech. So apologies to Jeff King out there, but I believe it was Texas Tech. And
what do they say?
And they were
rate them. What's their thing?
Oh man, who knows? There are a lot of weird slogans in Texas. A&M is gig'em, isn't it?
Yeah, gig'em, hook'em, yeah. Strange.
But they're going around asking questions. I mean, basic questions like, who did we get our independence from, and who won the Civil War, and college students. They ask the college, who are you? And I'm this. I'm a biology major. I'm a psychology major. And they can't answer those questions. And then they do a nice little job in the end because they bookend it, and they go, what show is Snooki on? And they all know it. And who's Brad Pitt married to? They all know that one. They all know those answers. But nobody knows who we got independence from. Nobody knows when the Civil War was or who won it. And you'd think, maybe we just take it for granted, but who doesn't know that? But apparently college students in 2016 don't know that.
Well, David, the Jeopardy College Bowl was just on. The Jeopardy College Bowl was on. And you know how they work through all of them, then the quarterfinals and the semifinals, they finally get down to three. So the Jeopardy question was, what senator served for 37 years from 1976 to 2009? And they gave one more clue. And the number one candidate who had the most money and was slated to win, she bet it all, said Obama. That Obama served in the Senate for 37 years.
Started when he was six.
Yeah, he started as a kindergartner. He was
right.
A prodigy.
Oh, wow. Well, yep. Said Obama. And
that's not even a good guess.
Yeah.
Right.
I just wondered, was it Helms?
No, it was Biden.
Really?
Yeah, it was Biden. Okay. Biden came out.
Helms has been there since about the
Biden came out early 60s, in 2009 late 50s, as the vice president.
Yeah.
Right. So
how does Trebek keep his composure?
No kidding.
I'm sorry, that's the wrong.
I'm sorry. You were dropped on your head.
May God have mercy on your soul.
I came out of my bed, and came unglued. Because the other ones were reasonable answers.
Yeah.
Bird and, people.
Bird is the West Virginia guy.
Yeah, right.
They're talking about his dog.
Strom Thurmond, South Carolina, North Carolina.
Well, see, Helms did like 4 or 5 decades.
Right, exactly. This was 37 years and all, but Obama was her answer. And
who is Obama?
I'm not even sure he was in the States by that time.
He was still a Canadian citizen at that point, wasn't he? Oh, conspiracy theories.
Oh, shoot.
All right. So we'll have another podcast to talk about when some candidates get elected and or nominated, rather, is the more appropriate word, and put before the Senate. And, David, it's your mission to come up with the data on this filibuster. So how would a filibuster actually stop the nomination process? How long can they do that for? And we'll talk about that one more time. Thanks for listening out there. Have a great day.